One big winner from the election of Donald Trump as president, if you want to call it a win, is the American Civil Liberties Union. Membership has soared in Illinois from about 14,000 before the election last year to 70,000 plus. That has created challenges for the ACLU to communicate with these new members and make sure the venerable organization is addressing its interests and needs. One way to do that is a tour of listening sessions, and it is Bloomington Normal's turn for the We the People listening tour. That's this evening at the Chateau Hotel and Conference Center. Joining us in studio is Colleen Connell, the Executive Director of the ACLU of Illinois. Welcome.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here.
Who are these new members and where do they come from?
Well, they come from across the state of Illinois. And when I say across the state, we have members in every state legislative district and every congressional district. And who they are is just about everybody from almost every walk of life. I got a letter the other day from a retired gentleman down near the Carbondale area who said he'd never before been a member or contributed to the ACLU, but that he was so concerned about what was happening in this country and the threats to constitutional rights and liberties that he was motivated to join the ACLU. And that sentiment has echoed throughout the membership surge that we've seen. People have said, I've always intended to join. I really care about what I see the ACLU doing, but it feels like the threat is very real to the constitutional rights that really provide the glue that bind us together as Americans.
What's been the change in membership in McLean County?
I want to say it's come close to tripling.
Okay. You've already done sessions in Springfield, Peoria, and Champaign. What issues are emerging from those?
And we see a common concern about voting rights, about the rights of immigrants, particularly the rights of young undocumented immigrants who are referred to colloquially as dreamers. We see a very serious concern about women's reproductive freedom and a real concern about LGBT rights. And I think we are also sensing a pervasive concern about the unwillingness of the Trump administration to abide by the checks and balances that are definitional of our democracy, and this recognition that this is a government of laws, not of men or of a man. And people are just concerned about what that portends for our democracy.
Do you expect different issues to rise in Bloomington Normal?
Not really. I've been surprised in some ways by the consistency of the issues that we've seen across the state. And one other issue that I would put in there that comes across loud and clear is the concern about racial justice, particularly in the context of policing. In each of the communities that we have made part of our listening tour, we have heard concerns expressed about disproportionate policing that focuses on African Americans and Latinos. And we have seen real concern about the fact that young black men, for example, are arrested at, you know, much greater rates than their representation in the population. And there's been that concern that is resonating loud and clear in every visit that we make.
The Illinois law that allows collection of that racial data on traffic stops, searches and seizures and arrests is due to expire.
It is.
It was a tough lift the first two times. Is it likely to be so again?
We are concerned about it, but it is an issue that is very important to our almost 75,000 members, and it'll be a focal point of the ACLU's legislative agenda for the 2018 spring session. And it's really been an important law from a variety of contexts, not just in terms of, you know, documenting the disproportionate impact of stops in minority communities, but also in terms of good policing and accountability, which citizens across the state and across all racial groups really care about.
The data in Bloomington Normal shows clearly that there is, as it is statewide, a disproportionate effect on minorities in the number of people stopped and the number of searches asked for, and minorities are less likely to have contraband when searched in Bloomington Normal than the general run of the population or Anglo-stopped people. This is a matter of some contention. Law enforcement tends to say, okay, yeah, that exists, but that doesn't really reflect how we police, because we're in high service neighborhoods when we do that. Is there a way to get better data, and is there a bipartisan way to adjust the law to drill down to a question that everyone wants answered, an even-handed police enforcement process?
Well, that argument by law enforcement is internally inconsistent. If they claim that the reason that they are stopping more people of color is because they are in high crime neighborhoods, that notion that they are stopping the right people is rebutted by the fact that you just pointed out, which again is consistent statewide, that people of color are less likely to be carrying contraband than Anglos. And so they're stopping the wrong people. You know, they're stopping a lot of people who are completely innocent, and they're not making good what we call shorthand Terry stops. They're not stopping people, you know, for whom there is a reasonable suspicion or even probable cause that a crime has been committed. And that's what we have found consistently. We found that in the city of Chicago, and we found that, again, sort of across law enforcement in the state of Illinois. And a couple of facts have come out in a number of the other communities that we visited. And again, this has also come out in the city of Chicago a couple of years ago, specifically with respect to marijuana, arrests for marijuana, which is that young black men of color are often stopped, frisked, and sometimes arrested for offenses that young Anglo men are not. You know, we were presented with data in one of the communities we visited where young black men were basically cited for, wait for it, jaywalking or walking in the street when a sidewalk was available for walking. And
pretextual stops.
Pretextual stops. Exactly. So from my standpoint, good law enforcement, even-handed law enforcement that is not racially biased, is something that ought to be a bipartisan issue. People who are Republicans and people who are Democrats all should care about good, even-handed policing and policing that's consistent with the Constitution.
The city of Bloomington recently created a Public Safety Citizen Review Board. Is that an increasingly common tool around the state? Has that borne good fruit, in your opinion?
It is an increasingly popular phenomenon that's been happening nationwide, and it's a very important development in terms of police accountability. But our concern is that these citizen oversight boards have real teeth to them and that they have an ability to see with, you know, great transparency the data that's produced about stops, about frisks, about arrests, about crime statistics. Because it's only when citizen boards have access to the data, again, the importance of the Traffic and Pedestrian Stop Statistical Study Act, which is up for renewal this year, and then actually have some authority to insist on accountability and the ability to discipline law enforcement when the rules are not being followed, when the law is not being followed. We want to avoid situations like we have seen in Chicago, where disciplinary actions against law enforcement by oversight boards in the past have not proved effective, and where we see after the fact, the city of Chicago has paid out more than $500 million over the last 6 or 7 years for and lawsuit damages for people who were harmed or in some cases died as a result of police misconduct or excessive use of force.
This task would be a lot easier with law enforcement cultural buy-in. How can that be achieved?
Well, we have actually worked very hard on that, and it's very important to note that law enforcement, both in Illinois and nationwide, does not necessarily oppose all of these measures. And the common ground we have here is we all care about community safety, and we ought to all care about abiding by the law. And we should hold law enforcement to those same standards as we hold everyone else.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're with Colleen Connell, the executive director of the ACLU of Illinois. Again, about the membership bulge, civil libertarians come from the right as well as the left. Do you know whether you have experienced a similar boost in membership from people who are on the zero government side of civil liberties as well as those opposing President Trump?
That isn't an issue on which we have any data. But I can say from experience and talking to members across the state that there has always been a significant number of ACLU members who view themselves as libertarians. And they view the U.S. Constitution, for example, as for what it really is, which is a negative constitution that puts real restraints on the amount of power that we, the people, give to government. And so there's always been that strain of restricted government power that courses through many ACLU members.
How, with so many new members coming from the other side of the political spectrum, will you continue to honor that constituency?
Because we strongly believe that the Constitution applies with equal force to people regardless of their religion, their race, their ethnicity, their gender. And that is going to be a considerable part of the ACLU's agenda for the foreseeable future. It is really, quite frankly, the essence of who we are. And it's not so inconsistent, Charlie, because most of the time in this country's history, the force of government has been used in a way that disproportionately affects minorities, whether it's religious minorities, racial minorities, and in many cases, women who have not had the amount of political or economic power historically that men have had. And so much of the ACLU's historical work has been to make sure that the Constitution applies with equal force in limiting government power that's attempted to be asserted against minority groups.
Voter access laws, of course, a big issue for the ACLU nationally. It's come up from time to time in Illinois, not notably in the last couple of years, although State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington, a Republican, has lobbied for voter registration laws as part of his belief system and effort. Do you see that arising in Illinois under the Trump-Rauner Republican ascendancy?
So I'm going to try to unpack that in a couple of different ways. There already are voter registration laws in effect in Illinois. But the experience has been a couple of times in the recent memory to actually expand voter access rather than constrict it. So recently, for example, the Illinois General Assembly passed a law that allows for election day voter registration. First was a pilot program, but now basically at least you know, the central voting place, the county seat in every Illinois county has to allow voter day, excuse me, election day voter registration. And counties with a large population, such as Cook, have to make that option available really in every voting place. We also had a law that was passed, vetoed by Governor Rauner the first time around. There were some changes made, and he signed it the second time around that allows for automatic voter registration when Illinois citizens access certain governmental services through state agencies. And so what we have seen in Illinois has been an expansion rather than a contraction of the right to register, to vote, and actually to vote.
In the news this week is a Supreme Court case on acquisition of GPS data from cell phone companies and whether a warrant with probable cause is necessary to get that information or whether law enforcement agencies can simply go ahead as part of the investigatory process under a lower standard that there are reasonable grounds for the records to be provided and that they're relevant and material to an investigation. The ACLU is a prominent part of that case. Why do you think that should require a warrant under the Fourth Amendment?
Because it is a search, and that's what the Fourth Amendment requires. The Fourth Amendment says, you know, that there shall not be unreasonable searches or seizures without a warrant. And as you know, were the government to try to search your landline records, it would need a warrant to get those records, essentially. And the fact that we are increasingly a cell phone society does not mean that the privacy and due process protections of the Fourth Amendment are obsolete. One could argue that they're more needed than ever before, given the pervasiveness of that technology and the increased ability of that technology to track the movements of individuals across this country. In fact, very importantly, the ACLU of Illinois was able to get passed in the Illinois General Assembly a bill a session ago that requires law enforcement to secure a warrant before they can access cell phone location data.
Should the nature of the information matter, though? If it's just a where were you, that kind of location, that's far less intrusive than a
Than
the contents of a text or an email or a web search.
I would dispute that, Charlie.
Okay.
That location information is critically important, and it's one of the reasons, for example, that law enforcement has been required to get a warrant before they can attach the old bug to your car in the sort of the pre-cell phone, you know, or you know, GPS type of thing. You have to get a warrant before you can, you know, attach a beeper or a tracer to a car because the locational information can sometimes be, and often is, as revealing as actually the content of any specific communications.
Yeah, and let's distinguish that example, though, with the idea that that is something that they believe to be an ongoing criminal pattern and that they're seeking to determine that. This is comparable, it could be argued, to asking somebody where they were, which police are certainly entitled to do. You know, it's conduct that has already taken place.
But a person also has the right to decline under the Fifth Amendment to provide that information about their whereabouts. And so our Constitution, the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, were really set up, again, to provide the individual with protections against government surveillance and government overreach, unless the government can prove the kind of reasonable suspicion or probable cause standard that allows government to get a warrant in order to specifically target an individual for surveillance. And that really was put in place to protect, again, the individuals from government overreach, that we as citizens have a right of travel and communication that is to be free from government surveillance unless government can make a showing that they have reason to believe that a crime is or has been committed or is about to be committed to justify government's invasion of our personal sphere of privacy.
Technology is constantly shifting. What other areas of tech do you anticipate need to be litigated or decided in coming years?
Well, there are a number of really important issues, one of which is quite close to the cell phone tracking data, and that's the use of stingrays that simulate a cell tower so that government can sort of identify, which signals or which telephone numbers are in an area. And so in addition to basically allowing perhaps, targeted surveillance because they're ostensibly looking for, my cell phone number or your cell phone number, it also allows government to identify, literally, tens or hundreds or maybe even thousands of people, completely innocent people in that area. And so, again, this piece of legislation that I was talking about, really puts limitations on government use of these stingray devices. Other concerns are, of course, biometric information, facial recognition technology, for example, could be hugely invasive. And a bill that the ACLU helped get passed a number of years ago, the Biometric Information Privacy Act, we call it BIPA in our internal shorthand, put some real restrictions on the use of one's biometric information, including your face, facial features, and its use by law enforcement or even by commercial, or I should say perhaps particularly by commercial entities, who may want to profit out of their ability to identify and then market based around your biometric information.
Under our Constitution, it's far easier to use the Constitution to restrict government and law enforcement from use of such information. But isn't it a tougher lift to do business restrictions?
Very, very great question, Charlie. The quick answer is yes. Under the Constitution of the United States, which, as you point out, is directed at limiting government action. But the federal constitution is a floor, not a ceiling, for how many rights we can protect and how robustly we can protect those rights and interests. And again, as you point out, sometimes these commercial interests have the ability to have a much more immediate and sometimes even a more profound effect on common citizens' rights than government. And so the ACLU and other entities, but particularly the ACLU, have been able to use state laws or develop state law protections that are directed at private businesses and private commercial entities.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Colleen Connell is the guest. She's the executive director of the ACLU of Illinois, an attorney in her own right. It's not just technology that changes. Rules and policies change as well. How might the end of net neutrality affect civil rights?
That's a very real threat. The lifting restrictions on both the speed with which information can be transmitted or will be transmitted, and giving a preference to preferred companies, perhaps customers of the internet service provider, or perhaps going one or two clicks further and restricting from access ideas or providers that the carrier doesn't agree with, poses a real threat to the free flow of information.
GLT lately told the story of Mohammed Mahmoud, an Egyptian citizen who was trying to come to Bloomington Normal to spend Thanksgiving with friends. He had been an exchange student at Heartland Community College to get an IT degree. It was a State Department exchange program, so he'd been thoroughly vetted. He'd visited before, following the completion of the program, but he was turned away in Chicago. His passport was taken and returned to him only after he got off the plane in Egypt. He says he was told, "Why would you celebrate Thanksgiving? It's a Christian holiday." He was also told they didn't believe his reason for a visit, that they believed he was here to live and work. It is true, he had no return ticket and had recently ended an IT job in Dubai, but he told GLT he was meeting with American friends and they were going to Trinidad and Tobago for a music festival and had not bought those tickets together yet. Does this raise questions of consistent application of policy at the borders?
Absolutely. And it also raises serious questions about whether he was targeted by virtue of his country of origin and perhaps his religion. And the ACLU has consistently opposed both the actual Muslim bans that President Trump issued in his executive orders, both the text of them and the scope and the application of them. And so we'd be very concerned about whether a law and executive orders were being applied fairly and with consideration of what we believe the Constitution requires.
The feds don't have to say immediately why they're denying somebody entry, though one can petition for a reason. Should that change? That they don't have to give an accounting immediately.
So, yes, that should change. I don't look for it to change immediately, but one of the hallmarks of our American system has been restrictions on arbitrary government power. And government shouldn't be afraid to actually articulate the reason for its actions or its decisions. We require courts to do that. As you know, when you see a judicial opinion, it's an opinion. This is why the court ruled. They back it up by reference to legal provisions or constitutional provisions. We should expect that. We should demand that of all government operators.
Colleen Connell is the executive director of the ACLU of Illinois. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting us, Charlie. It was really significant for us to be able to come and talk.
She'll be at the We the People listening tour at the Chateau this evening at 6 o'clock. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Sound Ideas.